Hello dear listeners and welcome once again to your weekly diet of Guardian political fodder. And today on the menu we have a hearty portion of electoral reform as well as a side order of MPs' expenses. And we'll be rounding our meal off with a post-prandial cigarette, or not if the government has their way. Dining with us today are our observer opinionistas Nick Cohen and Catherine Bennett, as well as our multi-talented head of multimedia, Tom Happold. Well, as we're sat here, the news is starting to seep out about exactly which MP has been asked to cough up what. Fresh from the wires, Tom Happold. Can you tell us anything at all about the early names?
Well, the largest repayment comes from the MP for Stevenage, Barbara Follett.
Not short of a bob or two in that.
Not short
either,
of a bob or two, which is she's owing a little bit over 42 grand. Then it's bad news for the Tories. Bernard Jenkins is in second place with a bullet with 39 grand. Andrew Mackay, 31 grand. John Gummer, 29. Julie Kirkbride, 29. And perhaps most embarrassing, actually, of the lot is Liam Fox, Shadow Defence Secretary, in with 24 grand repayment.
Wow. So, Catherine, do you think, like, we've almost grown... It's one of these things, isn't it, where we've heard about wicked MPs claiming for all these things now for a period of about 8 months or something, if I'm counting right. Do you think this is still going to have any impact at this point? Obviously, we're nearer to the election, but the public just switched off by it now?
No, completely. I think the political classes say they're bored with it, but people I know aren't at all bored with it.
Right.
Puts a spring in my step anyway. And especially hearing, you know, names like Barbara Follett and Gummer. I mean, you know, Gummer's, you know, the other comes looming out of the past with more money to pay back. It's fantastic. And I think lots of people would just... I mean, the trouble is it'll turn them off politics. It'll excite them not to vote, probably, rather than the other way around.
But do you think it will make a difference in individual seats? I mean, in I don't know, Gummer's majority is.
Of course it will, yes. There's, Andrew Mackay's name came up. There was a public meeting in Bracknell, where he's the MP, and the local paper, in the best traditions of journalism, even though the press were banned, smuggled in a camera. And they put a video of that meeting up on the local, I think it's the Bracknell Forest News website. And it is extraordinary. It is English anger at unearned privilege of people with who are taking the mickey, have got ideas above their station, who are having one rule for them and one rule for the others. And it's really quite instructive to see. The one that stays in my mind is some chap who is very un-English. He said, oh, my 16-year-old daughter, she had an affair with a man who left her and felt betrayed. And everyone starts giggling because you're not meant to talk like that in middle-class England about your daughter. He said, but that's exactly how I feel with you, Mr. Mackay. I trusted you. I thought you were an honourable man. And look at what you're doing with our taxes. If we did that, the Inland Revenue would be all over us. I mean, loads of people feel like that. And I think those MPs who have not resigned will face very tough campaigns, and rightly so.
Stevenage is also a Tory target seat.
This is the Barbara Follett.
I don't think Follett is standing again. I may be wrong about that. But if you are the Tory candidate, you know, you are pushing leaflets through doors this evening, aren't you?
Of course you are.
You know, you are going with that. Those sort of seats, you go with that story. It's a story that resonates. They're figures that people think, God almighty, that's a lot of money.
Isn't it much worse the Tories, though? The list of names you've given, it does have that feel that people with loads of money have been the ones who've been most likely to kind of take the piss and just, you know...
Well, on the second homes allowance, the bigger property you have, the more you can claim. That's the sort of madness. You know, just coming in here before I came in here, you know, it's sort of coming out dribs and drabs, a lot of the facts. But the marvellous revelation that apparently... one of the Tories MPs claimed for a flagpole rope and binding, which, yes, exactly. Or, you know, or maybe to hang themselves.
You might have claimed for a lamppost and rope.
But not the flag.
Not the flag. I assume that's been handed down for the generations. But, these are just hilarious. But it doesn't...
People can understand it, Tom. That's the thing. That people can't understand the national debt.
The
figures
bailout
are so big. Yeah. You know, they can understand that, and they can understand... They know that if they were to do this at their work, they would be done for. I've heard someone just going on about this, saying, look, if I self-employed, if I put my tax return into the revenue and my accountant makes a mistake, the revenue don't say to me, oh, that's okay. They say, no, it's your responsibility. But all the MPs are trying to say, oh, it was the accounts department's mistake. They shouldn't have let us do it.
But that's one of the things that they have been very criticised for by the chap doing the investigation, is that the MPs established what he calls a culture of deference that... You know, the officials can't question the invoices. Now, if you work where we work, you know, actually your expenses get you know, and I'm sure this is true about most places, my experiences were sort of something's rejected, something's questioned, all these things. It's always a slightly embarrassing conversation.
Tom, we work on The Observer. You need permission in triplicate to get on the bus.
But the deference thing is fascinating. I mean, because in fact, Blair did say he was, you know, he made a huge attack on deference in 1999 or something. And the idea that now it's a culture of deference that allows MPs to do this just suggests that what, you know, when he ended a couple of the culture of deference, you're just saying, you know, we're in charge now.
But there's also a problem with the symmetry of it. You have a culture of deference to the officials in Parliament who feel they have to sign off on all these expenses claims, and you have an increasing culture of resentment and culture of distrust of the electorate. So you have one set of people running inquiries worrying about the former, and the other set running around the latter.
But there's essentially this quote, culture of deference, this is from Thomas Legge, isn't it? Sir Thomas Legge, of course, a very, very great and very, very good former official of some sort. A Chilcot inquiry as well. We've now got a lot of previously very deferential civil servants being not so deferential to politicians.
Covering your backs is the technical term for it.
Covering your backs is the technical term, but the way that they're doing it is a bit messy, isn't it? And on the front of The Guardian today, we've got this story about how the various watchdogs that have been set up in respect of this thing, there's two chaps, I think, called Kennedy, as well as someone called Kelly, as well as Legge. They're all shouting and barking at each other now, these watchdogs, aren't they, Tom? Isn't the public going to get confused about who's really to blame?
I don't think there's confusion about who to blame. I think the public blame the politicians. I think that, on the whole, strangely, the Tories have come out of it better than Labour.
Well, there are more Labour MPs. You know, there are more Labour MPs. Yeah. So you're
also,
going to get
I think
more
it's
Labour
also,
scandals.
Though yeah. lots of the old-style Tories have got very embarrassing claims because they've got very large houses with moats and things like that, Cameron's just been, you know, he's just more effective
really
and things
yeah.
like that, and he's delivered on that. But I think all the stuff about, you know, chairman of this ethics committee versus the other ones, I think that will go over people's head. People just think MPs are greedy and dishonest
also,
and have
Tom,
to sort of...
Also, Tom, yeah. People go on and on about watchdogs and quangos. We are a democracy. We're a very weak democracy. There isn't a lot of democratic accountability in England, certainly. But in the end, it will be the voters. You know, some point in early summer, the voters will decide on this. And in a sense, all these Leggs and Kennedys are beside the point. And I still think that MPs, as Tom said, MPs who have fiddled and are staying on, are trying to hang on seats, an awful lot are standing down, are going to face really tough local campaigns, and deservedly so.
Well, as Nick says, we are some sort of a democracy, but the way that the voters do their business might be about to change, because after 13 years in power, and in all likelihood with less than 100 days left to go, the Labour government has finally asked Parliament for a referendum on changing the way we go to the ballot box. Gordon Brown justified his decision to push the so-called alternative vote at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday, where Mike White was watching him.
Well, Cameron obviously wasn't keen to talk about the economy or the spending cuts this week, and apart from talking about defence, easy one for the Tories, he raised this question of the alternative vote, Gordon Brown's new plan for an AV referendum after the election. Pretty blatant ploy to suck up to the Lib Dems, of course. Cameron had a good Mrs. Merton joke.
13 years into government, 90 days before a general election, can the Prime Minister tell us what first attracted him to changing the voting system?
Laughter. Brown just said, well, everything's changed this last year. I think he must have meant expenses. And in any case, I'm in favour of the alternative vote and you're in favour of the hereditary vote. Keeping the hereditary peers, that's not quite true either, but it's business. It makes me feel, well, maybe we are heading for a hung parliament. I was at a seminar this week where we all agreed, most of us at the end of it, it's going to be probably going to be a small Tory majority. But I don't feel that as confidently as I did a few weeks ago, because one of the odd things about Gordon Brown is that when things get really bad, when the sewage closes over his head, he sort of picks himself up and in a corner he fights. And he wasn't brilliant, but he stayed there, he stayed the course, and that's what John Major did and won an election off it.
Catherine, when we were chatting about the alternative vote before, you had a question. What
what is it? But it's different from PR, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. It's not the same... It's not the same as proportional representation, which means how many votes across the country a party gets that's how many seats they'll get as well. What it really is about is just how the votes are tallied up in each seat. So it's instead of putting a cross next to a name, you go 1, 2, 3, 4 next to candidates, depending on how much you like or loathe them. And then if the one you like the best doesn't win, so say you've got some Guardianista who's voted Green and they drop by the wayside, they can then sort of move their vote over to, by putting a 2 next to it, to a Labour or a Lib Dem, to try and keep the Conservative out, for example, or the other way around.
But what's wrong with the current system? I don't see what's wrong with the person with the most votes winning.
Well, Gordon Brown is thinking, as Michael White said, there is something in the air. There is just this feeling that, yes, maybe, a party led by Gordon Brown isn't going to inevitable defeat, and they might just be able to get a hung parliament, and so he's dangling this in front of Lib Dems. It's nothing to do with political probity or anything. There's just this thought in the air that maybe, just maybe, they could do it.
So it is him just being shifty again, basically?
Yep.
Right.
Well, it's an election year. Everything is about the election.
As Mike said, it's business. But Catherine, the point is here, I mean, you must know people, lots of us will know people who've said, I'd like to vote for such and such, but I can't because I'm worried about letting the other lot in. I mean, that, and one thing the alternative vote does is it gets rid of that problem. The other thing is it means that you can get the acquiescence at least of 50% of the voters is needed. Because if everyone's, you know, you might have a third of people who are going to vote for, for example, Barbara Follett, comes thick or thin. But if two-thirds of people are really fed up and put her right at the bottom of their ranking, then she won't get back in.
I mean, look, the criticism of the British electoral system, if you believe it, is it's not proportional. It doesn't, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Liberal Democrats, notoriously, poor old BNP, haven't got one member, UKIP haven't got a member, make it more proportional. But this doesn't answer. It doesn't give you a more representative parliament. On the contrary, you might have prime ministers with just sort of smashing.
The reason it's meant to appeal for the Lib Dems is that, the electoral system hasn't changed for years and years and years, apart from since the abolition of multi-member constituencies and Oxbridge MPs and things like that. And this is potentially, you've made the move, and basically you are now a lot more likely to move to a proportional system. That's why
you've had your first drink, why not stay for the
evening? Why not stay for the party? Yeah. You've tried a spliff, why not get addicted to heroin? That sort of thing. And that is supposedly the argument for it, for electoral reform.
I just tried to imagine Gordon Brown smoking a spliff. It's a horrible picture.
But if the Lib Dems had any decency, they'd say do the thing properly or give people a proper choice of PR or AV or something, wouldn't they, rather than, we'll grab this while we can.
Well, the only thing is that they do low politics too. They have to. They're politicians, and it would tend to give them a few more seats.
But I mean, can you imagine it? Can you imagine it with this hung? I mean, great for us. I mean, we'll be in work for ages. I mean, we can imagine.
Us meaning who? Sorry.
Journalists. Maybe it will just be well. Maybe we won't actually. Well, internet's game. But never mind. But we'll have something to talk about if we are. Look, you'd have Gordon Brown, who's lost the election.
Yeah.
The Midlothian question would come in massively. Labour government, all these Scottish MPs governing England. The Lib Dems have gone into this alliance to get a type of voting system they don't even agree with. Oh, it'd be wonderfully messy.
I think if there was a hung parliament, I think it'd be really hard, if the Tories are the largest party, for the Lib Dems to go with Labour for a system they're only lukewarm on.
Yeah.
Because, they'd get a kicking.
Oh, yeah.
But they've said, haven't they, that they'd go with whoever ends up with... If they had to go with one, they'd go with whoever ends up looking like they've won out of the main two parties. But I can't quite imagine, can you, Catherine, the Liberal Democrats getting into bed with either of them? Because they're going to be so rude about them through the campaign.
Well, exactly. And at the moment, actually, going back briefly to the expenses things, it seems to me they've had a better expenses crisis than anybody else, haven't they? So, generally, they're doing quite well at the moment, it seems, in terms of probity and clegges. And I don't see why they'd want to do some deal that looks... obviously really, really ropey.
I mean, it strikes me that the most likely outcome, if you get a hung parliament, is that...
I think you're underestimating the appeal of a ministerial limo and office. Politicians do become MPs. Well, not necessarily, not all of them, that's unfair, but a lot do because they want to run government departments, things like that. That is enormous temptation, and also your point.
But would you join the Lib Dems?
Across the world under PR systems...
If you want to be in government, why join the Lib Dems? What a dumb thing to do.
Sorry, Tim, go on.
Also... parties who really slag each other off in the elections get in bed with each other all the time all over the world. You have grand coalitions in Germany, you have all these things. People do that.
There is another argument, and I'm not sure on a respectable radio programme that I can mention this. The other argument is that the Prime Minister is off his rocker. and that this is just a potty idea that he's grabbed from nowhere. It's not going to appeal to the Lib Dems. It's not going to appeal to anyone. People don't understand it, but he's just flaying around, trying to think of something. What can I do to keep on past May?
It's not just anger management he's got. He's just generally insane.
Well, that is a point of view, but I see shades of our libel lawyers descending on the studio.
Well, Gordon Brown might be in need of a calming cigarette, but the rest of us are unlikely to be so lucky, because this week the government cranked up on their campaign to cut down on the filthy habit. They plan to force smokers who've already been shuffled out onto the steps away from public buildings entirely. And there's also talk of whether cigarettes should be stripped of their distinctive packaging and put instead into plain brown envelopes. First of all, Catherine Bennett, do you think that the mood is still there for taking on smoking more? We've made big strides in it in the last few years. Do you think this will be popular or unpopular?
I think probably, because I think most people now aren't bothered by smokers in their own lives, really, are they very much? I mean, I don't smoke, and it doesn't bother me seeing pitiful groups of smokers, you know, out in the rain. And I don't know where the kind of righteous zeal is meant to be coming from, other than in the government. But also, I think that there comes a point now it just looks absurd. I mean, if you hate cigarette smoking that much and there are reasons to do it, why not just make it illegal, or as illegal as cannabis? But you're going to want, there's going to be a kind of equivalence between the approach on cannabis and the approach on fags. Which is worse, generally speaking?
I think this is Fabian management of people's lives gone insane. I used to be quite a heavy smoker. I've stopped now. I chew nicotine gum like a horse. But, I mean, why did you say
the horses chew nicotine gum?
Well, I just chew all the time, or
they
camel
chew.
Or whatever.
Townies,
you know. Yeah, townies. Yeah, what do you know? You ban fox hunting. Which is another thing. You know, I mean, they ban fox hunting. They can't manage the economy. A Labour government can't regulate the banks. They can't send our forces into Afghanistan and equipment properly. And then you've just got this nasty management of people's lives, and they want cigarettes in brown paper. Why not put them in little black coffins? That'd be good. Black paper coffins. We warned all you people when they were coming for the smokers. They say, look, first Labour will ban smoking in pubs, then they'll ban drinking in pubs. And you can see all of them now desperately fronting to, and they're going for the booze next.
But
they're going for drink.
Can't you try and
govern this country honestly and efficiently instead of just wandering around banning stuff? It's none of your business.
Go on then, Tom.
I speak with some passion on this.
So we're here.
Look what are they doing? Pub culture is one of the essentials of English culture, of British culture. It encourages responsible drinking. There are huge taboos in pubs. There's a huge way of managing drugs that pubs bring. There's wonderful anthropological studies of pubs. And you know, there's no support for that. They are now, they've gone from smoking, they're going for drinking. I mean, Lord knows what would be next. It'll probably be sex or something
else.
Excuse
me, they extended the drinking hours so much.
But look at what they're doing now.
Come on, Tom.
Sorry.
But that, I do think they have got a problem, the government, is that with drink and fags, booze and fags, is that they liberalised drinking hours. They thought we should become a more continental country, we'll stagger closing time, we'll become more continental, people will sip white wine spritzers
all evening,
a wonderful time. And, you know, there has been, you know, over a prosperous decade, there has been a massive explosion in sort of binge drinking and all those things, which I do think that is a reality. If you do go out in towns, I recently went back where I grew up, and I used to go out as a teenager and get sort of slightly inebriated. And there are... It's really changed there. You know, there's loads of people throwing up. There's ambulance workers by benches, things like that. It's sort of shocking.
And liver disease is also meant to be massive, and things like that.
Yeah.
And also with these issues is, you know, when you talk about Labour as well, the reason Labour is slightly returning to a more paternalist thing is because it's their people who are dying because of it.
Well, there's some truth
their
in that, isn't there?
People object very much to, for instance... Okay.
Well, fewer of their people smoke than did a decade ago, don't they? I mean, the government has had some success here, and that's one reason why life expectancy has gone up, is because smoking has gone down in response to things like the smoking ban. No?
I think what we're seeing are middle-class reformers at the end of their period in office desperately scratching round for something else to tackle, while not facing up to the major areas of British life, like all the things you would expect the centre-left government to do, to regulate the banks, to bring some kind of workers' participation to the boards of companies. They don't do that. They don't empower people. They just tell people to even vote for an elected upper chamber.
So it's a fag-end reform.
Fag-end reform, yeah. Mind you, the Tories will be just as bad. You can see that same sort of attitude.
Well, I've got an article here from George Osborne wrote in The Guardian, no less, just a few days ago, in which he's sort of saying, he's writing it with this chap called Richard Taylor, who's written this book on nudge. And he's saying, you know, we're not going to do nanny state. We're going to do it differently. It's going to be smart nannying, because you will have, for example, information on how much energy you're burning on your bill, on your.
The government is doing that, though, on facts. You know, there's lots of adverts, there's lots of sort of helplines, there's lots
this?
Of stuff.
He's saying there's going to be a 7-day cooling-off period for store credit cards. Now, I think as soon as you... Well, no, it means when you sign up for one, you can only... Is that true already?
I think most things have cooling-off periods. But this whole nudge thing, God, I mean, they haven't got a single example where anything really significant has been achieved by nudging. There's just no evidence.
There's
one thing. Schiphol Airport, men pee on flies in the loo, apparently, and it works really brilliantly. And that's it. And the idea
there's
still...
What about pensions? If you say to people, you're in the pension unless you say not to... Then many more of them join the scheme.
That's more of a shove.
I don't know. That's, I think nudging covers that particularly. Also, the idea that something like smoking, you can't nudge people. You either say we like it or we don't like
also,
it.
Also, the Conservatives speak with forked tongue on this one, because do you remember Gordon Brown came up with this plan that if you die, we'll take your kidneys unless you say... We can't. That's typical mug thing. And the Tories went wild about it. You know, said no, you can't do this.
On that note, I think the mood in the pod has reached the point where we're going to ask all the politicians to nudge off, and I'm afraid we're going to have to do the same to you, dear listeners, as well. So thanks very much to Catherine Bennett, to Nick Cohen, and to Tom Happold for coming in and chewing over all of that with us. Politics Weekly was produced by Francesca Panetta. I'm Tom Clark. Allegra-less for this week, but hopefully she'll be back next time. And until then, goodbye.